There it is, the abrupt intro ending. Welcome in. This is the John Cass Podcast, back after a little bit of a break, you could say. A reminder to those listening to the podcast, hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, wherever you're doing this, so you just don't miss any new podcasts, because I'm ready for a whole new fall season. We're going to kick off the fall season with the head coach of the Wisconsin Badger volleyball team. He is Kelly Sheffield. Coach Sheffield, thank you for making your way back onto the podcast.
It's great to be here. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Your team's 5-0. We'll get right to the questions. And by the way, we do have some questions from social media, from Twitter or X, if you want to call it that. I don't know. I still call it Twitter for at least now. So we'll get to those in just a second. But 5-0, your team is so far 5-0, and four of your five wins have come against ranked opponents. It's been a pretty challenging non-conference schedule for your program, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, we've played some really good teams, and you know, every one of them have either been ranked or receiving votes. We've had a mix of home matches and road and neutral, so different styles of teams. There's been a lot of learning that's been going on, I can tell you that.
Yeah. So what did you learn about your team after the 5-set win over Tennessee? For those, just a neat reminder, Wisconsin won the first two. Tennessee comes back with the third and fourth set win, and then you get by them in the fifth set. What'd you learn about your team after that one?
You know, coming back after, you know, being up to 2-0 and losing winning that fifth set can be really tough in that situation, because you've got your opponent that's just feeling really, really good. And, you know, and you're really, really having to dig in on a shortened game. I thought our resilience in the fifth, we made some really big plays. We had some, there was a lot of really good stuff that was happening. And Sarah Franklin came out and was just, you know, tearing it up early on in the match. We had some others that were joining her as the match was going on. We gave up too many points receiving the ball. We've got to be better in serve receive. But then, you know, on the other hand, we're hitting against for a pretty high percentage to start the season against some really good competition. So defensively, we've got to continue to get better as well.
Yeah, you talk about the serve receive. It seemed somewhere in the third or fourth set, Tennessee just really started putting a lot of pressure on your team behind the service line. How do you get better? What is the process of getting better on serve receive?
It's perfecting your techniques, reps, having the right mindset, reading the game really well. There's an element that certainly we control. We're playing against a team that's really good serving wise. I mean, it's a lot of flat balls that are served with pace. They were served with more pace than anybody that we've seen consistently. And then when they started varying their planes a little bit, that made it a little bit more difficult. They were mixing up, driving us deep, and then dropping the ball off the table. And I thought we were jumpy. And, one of the things we're not wanting to do is have a lot of negative steps heading one way when the ball, you know, and then having to change directions and go somewhere else. That actually makes it even more difficult. We had quite a bit of that, which tells me we had some passers that were pressing and trying to do too much, because usually when you're calm and you're reading, your footwork is clean. And, I think playing in front of the, you know, maybe the home crowd, and, you know, playing three matches in whatever it was, 4 days, 5 days or whatever, we were a little jumpier than maybe what we needed to be. And they were making us pay because they're a really good serving team.
You know, five matches into the season, it's sometimes I caught myself, forgetting that's the home opener. You know, this is the first time you're in front of the Fieldhouse fans, the sellout of over 7,000 fans. And there was at one point in the fourth set, I think I can share it. If Here we go. There is one point in the fourth set, and if you're watching on Spotify or on YouTube, you can see what we're talking about. Carter gets a big kill. You try to fire up the crowd. We're going to watch a little bit of this here. Oh. So I'll just play it here in the middle of this rally. 8-8, fourth set, Tennessee and Wisconsin. So.
You play. Big chance for Wisconsin now. Slam straight down, Carter Booth.
Kelly Sheffield emotional after that play, asking the fans to show up. This is a big match, and he doesn't want them to forget that. Carter Booth just made an amazing play. Give her the ball on the beat every time. Get the crowd involved. Awesome for the Badgers.
All right, there you go. That was former Wisconsin Badger Haley Nelson with the commentary on Big Ten Plus. I loved that moment. I loved seeing you say, hey, come on, man. This is a home opener. This place should be like this when we need it. And, yeah. And the crowd responded, and they were waiting. They were waiting just to erupt. And I love that we set the tone there in match number one.
Yeah, it's. I think that was Haley's first match. It was great to hear her voice. And look, I'm not really interested in ever being the story out of, in a match and attention coming, but you know, it's one of the great things about our crowd is our crowd gets into it and they're excited and they're a huge, huge advantage for us. And, you know, when that whole building is fighting together, it's unbelievable. And well, there's nothing worse than trying to get, you know, get your team fired up and the crowd fired up and then you just get crickets in return. That can be a little weak. I'm, you know, there's probably been some times earlier in my career that maybe I've done something like that, but you know, the crowd was into it. Now, you know, maybe the next time it'd be nice not to send the next two balls into the net. It's fine. But yeah, you know, it's what can you say?
Well, I loved it. I mean, you're right, because they were waiting to erupt. They were like, okay, Booth just got a big kill. Coach says to get fired up, and then. The sequence of events didn't really allow them to do so. But I guess my point, just from watching it, for, you know, broadcasting the match on the radio, I was like, this is awesome, because all you needed was just the one little reminder, like, come on, let's go. And they responded and they were ready to go the rest of the match. So I like that.
Crowd.
I
don't know.
What's that?
It's just, the sporting event in there, and I don't think it matters who you play, you know, our crowd shows up every single match, every match that they show up, and there's an energy about them. There's excitement for them. There's an understanding of sport from our crowd that we're not going to be, that every player is not going to be on top of their game every single match. And our opponent is also, you know, they're playing us and that date is circled every single time that we're playing somebody. We know we're going to get their full attention and their best effort. And our crowd is with us every time. They're excited every time. You don't see them moaning and groaning and everything else. I think, you know, that they know that our players and our team are giving everything that they have in that moment. And, you know, when you ask them to kind of get behind, it's not difficult. They're with us every step of the way. We totally feel that, and we see it when they're charging into the field house every day.
You know, obviously you're busy with the match as it's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you happen to, after the fact, catch one of your first time fans who made it to the field house. I don't know if you saw sitting on the end line opposite of the student section was Irene. Did you notice Irene? Do you know who I'm talking about here?
Oh, the 90 some
94 and a half year old.
94
yes.
And a half. No, during the match, I had no idea. But it's, but when I got home, that was the talk of the house. And, so they were filling me in and saying that she was the showstopper and got a lot of airplay on the billboards and or the giant screen. And I mean, that's awesome.
It was so fun. It was so cool. So more props to Irene. I hope you enjoyed your very first Badger event, which was a volleyball match. And I hope we see more of Irene at the field house.
You know, Loyola Chicago's basketball program has somebody that has really kind of been close. Mm-hmm. And so, I think, you know, Irene, we haven't lost since she's been in the house. So, it's we can, if we can sign her to an NIL deal and get her full time in there, I think we're all for it.
Yeah, Sister Jean, I think you're referring to with Loyola Chicago. So yeah, Wisconsin could have Irene. I would love that. I think that's so cool. You know, I wanted to ask you about the lineup as well, because that is probably one of the number one things that fans are always kind of talking about or asking about. You mentioned the lineup. Now, you started that match against Tennessee with Yulia Ojo at libero, switched to Gutschkin. So I guess what determines the lineup? How do you pick a lineup with such a deep roster?
I don't know if we're deep. I think we have a lot of options. I think there's difference there. I think if we have, I don't think we have a wave of people that are not in the rotation that can kind of jump in there. You know, if something happens to one of our setters, then, you know, we don't have a bunch of options back there. I think most of our healthy attackers are in the rotation. You know, we've got a brigade of a backcourt player, certainly, that are really important. But from an attacking standpoint, net play, I think most of them are in. You know, it's we're trying to figure some things out, right? It's a you know, we've got Timmy in here that can really do an awful lot at the net, and you know, we're trying to figure out how to best utilize her. And Sarah Franklin, I think, is playing at a really, really high level right now. And Yulia is a really important player. I mean, she's been our best, you know, played in every match for the past 2 years. And we've won a lot of matches with her, and she's our best ball control player. And, you know, trying to figure all of that out. Both of our right sides are hitting it at a really high level. Both of our middles are playing real well. And you know, we've taken a look at Yulia on as the libero, and I think she's trying to figure that out. It's a you know, there's a lot that goes to that position, and you know, I don't really want to have our best passer on the bench. So I think we're going to continue to have a look at her in the libero position. Sometimes she can get over analyzing things because it's new. You know, when we first saw her in Europe, she never passed. I mean, she played six rotations because that's what you do in Europe, but she was hidden because she was an attacker. So the opposite in international ball rarely passes the ball, and she didn't. And so then she's come here, and we moved her to the left side. She's turned herself into the best passer. You know, now we're taking a look at her as a libero, but she's trying to put all the pieces together. And sometimes when she's trying to put the pieces together, sometimes she forgets that there's five other people on the court that, you know, that we all connect in things. And so we made a switch to try to get a little bit more in that match. Brought Gigi from the DS to the libero position and had Yulia move to the left. You know, with probably, you know, something that's probably a little bit more familiar with those guys, with our team, and probably had a little bit mixed results, but some things that we'll continue to learn. You know, playing time. One of the things with, I mean, we see these guys day in and day out, right? I mean, we see them. We had them all spring, and we had them in Europe and 2 weeks prior to that in preseason and the practices between the matches. And so we don't really go in and just, here, let me just try this. That's never a mentality. Let's just try this and see what happens. That can be a mindset of people that aren't in our gym every single day. We know what we have. And if people are wanting to play more, then they've got to show that every single day in practice. The people who are out on the court are the ones that are showing it day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out. And there's thousands more reps that are happening in those practices than that are happening in matches. So we don't ever sit there and say, here, let's try something different because this person, you know, in baseball, if you have a 300 hitter and then they go on a slump and they're hitting 200, well, if you've got somebody on the bench that's hitting 250, you sub them in, right? But if somebody is on the bench and they're hitting 150, well, that, right. You know, yeah. So we put it on the people, and everybody knows that when they come in, you know, that isn't a, it's not a secret or anything. We value what we're doing in the practice gym every single day. And the other thing I think that goes into it is there is players' health and the ability to practice every day. Sometimes we have some people that are able to go through a match warm-up, but they're not able to string together days on top of days in the gym. In a healthy manner, and or maybe their health allows them to be a spot player from time to time. And so all of those things kind of go into it.
Moving on. So we talked a lot about Tennessee. I know there are a couple of matches coming up at the Fieldhouse, obviously with Arizona and Miami. At the press conference, you were asked, I believe, about the Fiserv match briefly against Marquette next week. And you talked about how your team doesn't look ahead of those things, which for many people is really hard to do, not to look ahead, right? Because many times we're often looking to the future and wondering, okay, how are we going to, you know, do this when we get there? So how are you able to guide the team in this kind of like moment by moment process and just Arizona and then Miami and not let your team ever get distracted, or as best you can to do not to get distracted with something that's in the future down the road? How do you do that when so many times as fans or just as normal people, we're always looking ahead, like what's next, what's next, what's next?
Yeah. As a fan, I do the same thing. We all do, right? I don't remember the last time I thought my team did that. Okay. I don't remember that ever being a thing. We may not be on top of our game for a particular match or something, but I honestly can't remember that being something that any of us on the coaching staff thought that was a deal, or any of our players have ever said that. I think everybody is really good at just locking in on what is in front of you. I think there is such respect for our opponents and who we're playing and what they're capable of doing. You know, what we try to do when we're playing for a team is we talk about what is the essence of this team. Mm-hmm. And what do they do really well that we've got to do something about that to slow them down to or to exploit. And, you know, and everybody's high end is capable of beating you. I mean, every time. And so when you understand that, it demands your full attention. And, you know, in Arizona and Miami, we've got them, and those two teams couldn't be more different from each other, which is going to really make it challenging for us to play a totally different style of team from, you know, 24 hours later. You know, and then you get locked in on during that time of film and recovery and, you know, training room needs, and your server pass early in the morning, you got film sessions. There's just no time to sit there and daydream. You know, you've also got the first week of classes started, yesterday. So it's you have to be where your feet are. And I think our players and our staff does a really good job. We may not be on top of our game every day, but it's not because we're not, you know, we're daydreaming out front. But the Marquette match, it looks like it's going to be a sellout. you know, I asked Jared Elliott and I were texting earlier this morning, and I said, does 18,000 fans even, you know, does that mean anything? In our sport, I don't know. Because he was asking me if we're going to play at a football stadium. But I said, well, we're playing in front of 18,000. Is that still a big number? And, you know, he said, hell yeah, it's still a big number. That's a massive number. You know, it's so it'll be cool when that match gets here.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously that reminds us of the match with the 92,000 and three fans. What were your reactions to that one? And from, I was going to say from another school who did that. And the reason I was going to say another school and not specifically name the school is because I was watching a report by NBC on that match. And the reporter says the reason they moved their game to a football stadium was because another school had broken their record. And I thought, oh, another school. Anyway, the point, I wonder which school that was. What was your reaction to that? And on a side note, I think you're right. I think we've kind of reached the pinnacle of how many fans can squeeze in to watch a match. But what I would love to see from the world of volleyball is just programs saying, okay, well, let's just have our own. Let's, you know, the back and forth might be done because that's a pretty big number, but it's still a great event, I think, for women's athletics, number one. It's a great showcase for the sport. And once again, it shows that that wasn't just a one-time thing, because this school may put 80,000 in a stadium. This school may fill up their basketball arena. I truly think if Minnesota got organized and got a great match, I think they could get a lot at U.S. Bank Stadium. Yeah. Iowa basketball is going to play in mid-October at Kinnick Stadium. So, like, I would love to see schools and universities do this just to do it. Like, okay, that maybe the record thing is over, but let's just do it. So I guess, what are your thoughts on that? And kind of what are your thoughts on maybe someday in the future expanding?
You know, I thought that match showed great from what I've seen. I haven't seen the match. We've been busy, but you know, you certainly see all things. I thought it was presented excellent. You know, that it was done exactly how it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. It's with respect to the programs, to the players, to the fans, to the sport. They didn't go on the cheap at all. I had recruits that are coming here, people that are going to be here that were at that match. And, you know, I was texting them and saying, hey, are you at the match? And they said, what, would you be mad if I said yes? I said, I'd be mad if you said no. You know, we weren't playing, I'd be there. So I thought it was great. Am I interested in here going and grabbing that back? I don't know. If it happens, it happens. You know, I want to raise everything. You know, I want the entire sport to be elevated, and I think we're in a better place if it's more than just one or two or three programs at the entire sport. I think there is a big time following in this sport, and it was incredible.
Yeah. And I would love to see more schools try to put an effort toward that, because I think basketball arenas could definitely be, yes. You know, you're going to get more than 10,000 easy for a lot of these schools, especially in the Big Ten. You could probably fill the whole thing up if you do it right. All right. Some questions from Twitter, and then we're going to wrap up this podcast with Kelly Sheffield. So I put out the post asking for questions. And so we'll kind of go rapid fire. Some of these you've maybe already addressed, but I know you mentioned the plane of the serve when talking about Tennessee, and Nuclear Badger asks to describe what you mean when you say plane of the serve.
Well, we don't really want too many balls right on a passer. So where the passers are, when you have what is more typical is you're playing against three passers, a server serving against three primary passers, and you've got some secondary passers. The ball is right on them where they're not having to move at all. That would be the plane of the passers. Typically, we're wanting to drive them deeper, or want to drop it in front of them, or we're wanting a short ball inside of the 10-foot line. Those other areas would be different planes of the court.
The Mad Counselor asks on Twitter, what offense do you tend to run? Does it change often? How would you describe that?
Well, it's not an, I can tell you what it isn't. It's not an evolution of how I'm thinking. I don't think all 6'2 is superior, or now I'm infatuated with back row attacks. I don't ever think that way. I mean, I've had teams that have ran a 5'2. I've had teams that have run a 4'2, 5'1, 6'2, which is, what is our talent? What is our ticket to win? I don't get married to a system. And, you know, you think back to our 2019 team, what was our ticket to win? We had superior backcourt players defensively and passing, and great center and great middle attack. And so it was about being in system as much as possible and trying to get the balls to our middles when we can. And, I remember that was something that I get asked a lot about, you know, by some of the announcers, you've got no back row attack. And I said, I know we don't, but this is how this team with this group has the best chance of winning. In 21, we went with some DSs, and then as the evolution of not just Jay Demps, but some of the other people, then we added a back row attacker. Our defensive specialist was actually a back row attacking specialist. And that's how that team evolved to be better. Right now, we're in a 6'2". We're utilizing our backcourt a little bit more. And that is fit this. I had a group in Dayton that we went with a 5'2". So we had a tall setter playing across the back row, a smaller setter in the same position playing across the back row for her. They were subbing in and out for each other. And that was the best for that group. And so it's not necessarily an evolution as it is of how do we maximize what we think is our ticket to win.
All right, so this is kind of more on the lineup side again. Cheese Trader asks, are there plans for integrating Temi Thomas more into the offense and Carter more into the offense? And once again, I think with Carter, maybe that's just a result of what is allowed with the pass. And then are you letting them get comfortable with the setters first and planning to add, or just a matter of opportunity? How would you address
that? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the passing part of it. If you're going to get your quick attack involved, you have to be passing in a certain way to be able to do that. And you have to be doing it all the time where, you know, enough of the time that you don't just become predictable. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, if you're only occasionally passing well, and every one of those times you go to the middle, well, it's a little bit predictable for the blockers to go up and set up in those scenarios. And so, and also there's a component of what does the opponent. One of the great things about the options that we have and the attackers that we have is it kind of forces the blockers to choose what they want, what they're trying to slow down. And so that's why you see certain matches where, you know, early on the first couple matches, I think we went to Carter a lot, and then middle started shifting towards her and help was coming from the wing. Well, all right, we forced you into that choice. Now we're going somewhere else. Maybe that's long string. Maybe that's out of the back row. Maybe that's away from the quick. And so that's why you've started to see, you know, some matches where maybe somebody early on is having massive amounts of attempts. It's based off of what we're seeing their choices are. And then if they're changing how they're blocking or defending, then hopefully if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, then we're recognizing that and making a counter. So.
Okay. Final question, Eric on Twitter. Well, he asked a bunch of questions. So there's like four of them in here. I guess basically serve receive. Is there any concern on how, he said first weekend looked to be heavy on service errors against Arkansas and Tennessee.
Yeah.
And then he asked, is there any concern on how this affects serve receive long-term and the mentality around it?
I don't get too concerned about service errors that much. I try not to. It's probably better said than maybe in practices sometimes, but what I try to remind myself is early on in season, I don't get too concerned. For instance, I think Timmy's spin serve, and we saw it get really consistent in Europe, can really mess with some people. But you know that you're going to have a lower end percentage because of that. You just know you are. And so what is the trade-off there? Well, if we're blocking, you know, part of that is what are we point scoring in other rotations, and are we able to side out, and what is our defense like, and all those types of things. But I'd really like to have her serving, even if it comes at a little bit lower in percentage. Mm-hmm. Carter's serve is just nasty. I mean, it is just nasty. And so is Anna Smrek's. They don't get it in enough. And we have Anna subbing in for one of our setters. And those two have probably been our best servers for the past years, our two setters. So Anna is really kind of in our system, isn't really an option to come in and serve if we have our subs. But Carter is, because we need one of the middles. Our passers, people just cannot pass or serve. Our best passers get eaten up. But she was starting to lose a little bit of confidence in that. And I don't want that. She was missing too much, and it was starting to impact other areas of her game. So we dialed that back. But we're going to keep trying to get her game experience in that, because our high end is so high. Hmm. As the season goes on, you got to start reeling that in a little bit. We got Carter and Timmy right next to each other serving a lot of times when both of them are gone. And that can mean a couple rotations where you're not scoring points. You can feel a pressure as a team. I'm a little bit more willing to deal with that right now for our long-term game. And then make the necessary adjustments as we get further along in the season.
All right. Well, Coach, I know you've got a couple to get ready for. We're recording this on the day of the Arizona match, so I'll let you go prepare for that, and thanks for the time.
You know, John, quick question here. I'm looking at that thing over your right shoulder, a view with the shades on. Yeah. Yep. But you've shaved since then. So yeah. Are you going to grow the beard out, or are you going to make an adjustment on a new caricature behind you?
I'll probably keep it the same. The beard, the beard is hit or miss with me. I did for like a month this summer, just go straight mustache. And I thought it looked pretty dang cool. I thought maybe bring a mustache back, but that's a really hard look to pull off, I think. You got to be very confident if you're doing a mustache.
Do you go with the mustache down? Do you go with just a little one? Do you do the handlebars? Do you go just straight right across?
I go a little bit down.
An arc on it.
Yeah, a little bit down, and it just fills in. It fills in really well. Yeah. But I don't. I'll probably just go no beard or no mustache for the rest of the year, I would assume.
And we'll just keep it the same. What are you doing with that thing back there?
So I had talked to my daughter, and she we had agreed that if she gets her hair colored, I can cut my bun off here. Yeah. And the hairstylist called and said, hey, we've got an opening. This was like last week. So we were expecting to do this like weeks from now. So I'm really, I don't know what I want to do, because here's my bottom line. When this will eventually get cut, but when it does get cut, like, I'll never grow long hair again. You know what I mean? So like, now that the opportunity is there, now I'm kind of almost chickening out. I want to do a hybrid. I want to donate. Obviously whatever I cut is going to be donated, but I want to donate and see, can I have like a mini bun and just kind of grow it back again? I don't know. It's either that, or it's just going to get all cut.
Did Izzy Ashburn approach you in Minnesota?
No.
She brought scissors and a razor for you.
No, she didn't.
I'm telling you. Oh, opening weekend. She had somebody deliver it to the hotel, and she and her and the team. Maybe I'm spoiling something right now, but the plan was to get you in a chair, and
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And the team have at it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I saw they had a full kit. They had a, one of those things that, to keep the hair off of you. It was, the whole nine yards.
Oh boy. That would have been interesting. I don't know what I would have done. Okay. You can cut it off. I get that. I want it to be donated. So they got to do that. Right. But then who then gives me a haircut afterwards? They're not qualified. Are you lying to me right now?
I'm not lying to you right now. There was an underground discussion that involved a lot of people. Do they wrestle you down? Do they tell you a story? Do they just come right out and say, "Here, this is what we're going to do"? I think everybody is aware that you're wanting to donate your hair, so that complicated things a little bit. Yeah. Because they want to be respectful for that. And then I don't know, if you donate hair, do you have to get a cooler and pack it full of ice or something like that?
It's not a finger.
You have 24 hours to send it somewhere. These are questions that we don't have answers for.
Wow. Okay. Well, I thought maybe I could put this on the back burner, but I think I'm going to have to start discussing this again about how and or when this should happen. So thank you for that information, Coach.
The next road trip, you keep your head on a swivel.
I will. It's just come out of nowhere. Thanks, Coach Sheffield.
We'll see.
That's head coach Kelly Sheffield on the podcast. I had no clue. I had no clue that was a possibility at all. So, man, I got to start thinking about the man bun again. Thanks for listening to this edition of the John Cass podcast. A reminder, hit subscribe. Subscribe is going to help this podcast grow. Thanks to Coach Sheffield. And we'll have a whole new fall season, hopefully with multiple interviews per week. We'll see how that goes. Thanks for listening to this edition of the John Cass podcast. Goodbye.